All right, change gears just a little bit now. We're going to talk about the procedure for getting drugs approved and the legislation that has regulated drugs. Now, the very first one, before 1906, you could sell anything you wanted for any disease, and it didn't really matter in the United States. In 1906, Congress passed a law that said a drug must be what you say it is. If you're selling snake oil, by golly, it better be snake oil and not scorpion oil. In 1938, the Congress established the FDA. Well, I don't know if they established it in 1938. But in 1938, they said, you know, a drug has to be tested for safety by the FDA. So it doesn't have to work, but it has to be what it says it is, and it can't kill you by accident, within reason.
That's good.
Then in 1962, they said, you know what? In addition to being what it says it is and being safe, it's got to do what it says it does, within reason. And so, 1962, they set up testing procedures for that. Then, in 1970, we passed what they call the Controlled Substances Act. So, put an end to the 60s real quick.
Nice.
Yes. So, before that, you could smoke marijuana, you could have cocaine. It's uncontrolled. With the Controlled Substances Act, those things became illegal. It also established what we call schedules. There's five schedules, schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, and
5,
which are different restrictive levels of a drug. Level 1 is the most restricted, which means that the FDA believes that there are no valid medical purposes for the drug, or that if there is a valid medical purposes, the risks outweigh the benefits. Schedule 2, very dangerous drugs, but the risks are outweighed by the benefits, or the benefits outweigh the risks. Schedule 3, a little less dangerous, a little more benefit, until you get to 5, which is lots of benefit with very little risk. And then beyond that, we have what we call legend drugs, or prescription drugs, which are not controlled, but you can't get them without a prescription. And then beyond that, we have OTC, or over-the-counter drugs, which you can get without a prescription. All right, now, in 1992, they relaxed the procedures for getting certain high-risk drugs on the market. These are for drugs that treat people with cancer or HIV/AIDS. And the thinking there was, well, the person's going to die anyway, so if we use an experimental drug and it doesn't work quite right, in this case, what they're saying is that the potential benefits outweigh the potential risks in these untested drugs. 1997 was the FDA Modernizing Act, which put a fast track in for AIDS, cancer, and other life-threatening conditions. It also said manufacturers must give 6 months' notice before discontinuing a drug. So before, what could happen is you're taking a drug for 15, 20 years, and one day you go to get your refill, and the pharmacist says, I'm sorry, they don't make this drug anymore. Now they have to give you 6 months' warning. FDA can require testing in children if it's going to be marketed toward children. One of the problems that we have in clinical trials is we want to test them in men because men
don't get pregnant,
and men are adults. But if you start testing it in children, or you start testing them in women, you begin to run into some ethical issues. What happens if the woman becomes pregnant? What happens if you harm a child? So what happened was sometimes, even though a drug was meant for children or meant for women, it wasn't tested in women and children. It was only tested in men because it's safer. So the FDA began to say, you know, we can require you, if you market this primarily to children, we can require you to test it in children first. It also started a clinical trial database. And then drug companies can provide physicians with articles on off-label uses. Now, the word for a use that has been approved by the FDA is indication. So if we say the indications for this drug are, what that means is the FDA has approved this drug to be used for these purposes. An off-label use is anything else. So before this time, drug companies could only give physicians marketing data or marketing information that was indications, what the FDA had approved. Now they said, you know, you can provide them with articles or journal articles that talk about off-label uses if you like. All right, the drug approval process. First thing we have is we call preclinical testing. So preclinical means before we start testing it in humans. So in this case, we're looking at is toxicity, pharmacokinetics, and possible useful effects. These are typically done in animals. Dogs are very popular, mice, rats, guinea pigs, monkeys. Not your mother-in-law. Now, once it's been approved in the preclinical phase, we begin what we call clinical testing, which is humans. Now, the very first one is called phase one. We've got normal subjects, which means they do not have any diseases, typically young men, typically men who don't make a lot of money, and they get paid for doing this. So the whole idea here is just to establish the metabolism and side effects. We're just trying to see if there's any bad things that happen. Once that's done, we do phase two, which is patients, and we're going to look at their therapeutic utility and dosing range. How much drug does it take to get a therapeutic effect, if any? Does this work for this disease? Once that's been completed, we begin phase three, which are each step has more and more people in these, and they last longer and longer. This first trial might last 2 to 6 weeks. This trial might last 6 months. This one will usually last 2 to 3 years, depending on the drug. So once it's reached phase three and they've successfully completed phase three, the FDA will give what they call conditional approval, which says, okay, you can begin marketing this drug to the public, but you're still on probation. And then we have what we call phase four, which is post, with a T, marketing surveillance. And the idea here is to pick up drugs that might cause harm in, you know, because if you're giving a drug to a limited number of people, you might not catch some of the side effects. But when you're giving them to millions of people, things show up. So, for example, Vioxx was an example of that. Bextro is an example of that. If you remember Baycol, which is kind of like Lipitor, was an example of a drug that was pulled off the market because of this phase four post-marketing surveillance. Now, limitations of the process. We talked about the women and children problem. And then failure to detect all adverse effects. And that's because there's a difference between giving a drug to 1,000 people and giving a drug to 1 million people. You're going to have a lot more exposure, a lot more potential for side effects.